Good evening, and welcome to yet another episode of The Last Knock, your friends in horror since 2013. Indeed. I am Johnny Numb, and joining me tonight, as always, is...
Oh, Billy Crash. I was just trying to send you a picture of something,
and I'm like... Oh, Bill, I don't want unsolicited dick pics. Please, come on, man.
This one was stamped for approval by forget it, man. I can't think of anybody. John Holmes is dead. Damn it! Fuck! Anyway, go ahead, Johnny. Quit screwing up the show, Johnny.
I'm screwing up the show. Alrighty, I see how it is. Well, Bill, maybe like John Holmes before us, we should get into it a bit slowly before we work up to the payoff here.
Mm-hmm.
Because tonight we are discussing slow burn horror. And I'm making air quotes because I...
Oh, God, I hate that shit. I'll clip your freaking fingers off.
I'm doing it like Dr. Evil, kind of.
Oh, well, that's all right.
Slow burn horror.
Oh, God. I hate the term slow burn. I freaking hate it. It's one of the phrases and words... I'm not going to tell you the words that I hate because people are going to go... Freaking... tweet me and stuff with like my hated words, but that's one of them.
Well, Bill, what comes to mind with that term? What does the slow burn mean to you? And maybe as a follow-up question, what would you substitute as a phrase or term for this type of movie?
Well, actually I was equating it to songs before, you know, those those awesome epic songs, if they're epic, they don't have to be, but a song that builds into this great crescendo at the end. And, you know, I was thinking of the movies that have slow pacing.
Very good.
Before it pays off at the end. There's some that I like, there's some I don't like, there's some I want to revisit because maybe I didn't appreciate it the first time. But I like the ones, I think if they maintain an element of suspense or weirdness, the payoff could be incredible. And the best example I have is not even a horror movie. That's why I'm going to talk about it now before we get into it.
Yeah, sure. Go ahead.
Was a movie made in the 80s called The Miracle Mile.
Oh, yeah.
And that is great because, like, you're watching, you're like, what's really going on? And then after a while, you're like, holy shit! It's like, and then you're getting punched in the face. And it's a movie I can't get out of my head. I can't get the ending out of my head. And it's just so well crafted. And that's where your dialogue has to be strong. Your interactions between characters has to be strong. You have to be giving us something to warrant me watching this. Like last night I watched this piece of shit horror movie. It's starting off slow, and after a while I'm sleeping, baby. I'm sleeping because you guys don't have the talent to make this thing rock. And a good slow burn movie will have that element of building and hopefully suspense that'll lead to a phenomenal finish, you know?
Yeah, and I don't disagree with that, Bill. I think that's what I was thinking as well.
Cool.
Though you're talking about Miracle Mile as a slow burn film?
Well, I was, because in the beginning, like, well, what's really going on here? You know, and it's like a guy trying to get a date with a girl. He picks up a phone for a phone call he shouldn't have picked up. But it's like, for the longest time, you're like, well, is anything really going on? And,
Anything gonna happen? Yeah. Because I think it kind of, I agree with you, like up to that point where he's at the diner and waiting.
Yeah.
And then once he gets the phone call, it starts to pick up, so.
Yeah, but it's still like, well, you know, that's sort of like a bait and switch thing too, but whatever. What the fuck?
We'll discuss bait and switch at some other point, yeah. Well, you know, Bill, this show came to mind, this idea came to mind last night after I walked out of Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
You walked out on it?
No, I didn't. I walked out after the movie was done. Okay, I should clarify that. I should clarify that there.
Fuck this movie. Fuck you, Tarantino. I'm out of here.
And what I will say is the reason I thought about Slow Burn as a topic to talk about for horror was because Tarantino does a good job periodically with sequences of slow burn suspense.
Oh yeah.
There are some moments, or I should say maybe like 10-15 minute stretches in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood that are genuinely suspenseful because he sort of winds them up slowly to kind of this payoff and mm-hmm. you don't quite know where they're headed. And there's a particular scene where Brad Pitt's character finds himself at the Spawn movie ranch where Manson and his followers lived. And you get kind of this tingle because it's like, where's this going? We know who these, you know, we know who these characters are and what their place in history is. And then he does kind of a twist on it. But there's a significant buildup and you're kind of left, you know, wondering about the outcome. And I think he does that well, but he only does it well in certain instances and in certain isolated sequences right. for the most part. I like a bunch of his movies, don't get me wrong, mm-hmm. but oftentimes I have a real problem with his sense of pace in that he'll let kind of the plot and characters meander because he's so enamored of the dialogue or something
yeah.
or the homage. And that to me, yeah, whatever. You can say it the American way, Bill.
I'm saying it the proper way, period. But anyway, go ahead, Johnny.
Homage.
No,
homage.
It's wrong. Anyway, go homage. Ahead. Oh,
but my whole point is, you know, something like Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Right.
It's too distended. Mm-hmm. and it's too. I did not like where it wound up. For as much buildup as there is in that movie, it's only like there's like these periodic moments of catharsis.
Right.
And the ending I thought was kind of a slap in the face, even though people seem to be going on about it as, you know, oh, it's great. You know, I'm like, no, it's not. But I was thinking,
he is his bandwagon followers, you know, I mean.
Well, I mean, it's kind of.
I love David Lynch, but you know, Dune sucked, you know, and he knows it, so that's good.
Yeah, and I think there's a bit of a problem, like with the fact that Tarantino has so much power that no one can tell him, like, hey, maybe you should, you know, maybe
he
you should
listen anyway. I mean,
yeah, exactly. It'd be
he's
like you
very self-centered figure.
Yeah, you'd get fired off the project if you gave him notes on something. So, mm-hmm. but. That being said, it made me really think about films and horror films in particular that really kind of stick the landing. They start off with a deliberate pace and build up, and they do lead to something, whether it's definitive or ambiguous. It doesn't really matter if
right.
it's done well. That's what counts, and you'll be left either saying that was a really good ending, that was satisfying or cathartic, or you'll be saying, I'm going to think about this because there's stuff that's left open to think about.
Yeah.
And I can't think of a way to like break it down except in a sense of when you're watching a movie like you're so accustomed to, Bill, you get like a bad feeling or a good feeling within like the first couple of minutes where you can kind of predict, okay, I might have a good time with this. This might be good, or this is going to be painful like a root canal.
Oh, I love it, Johnny. I like that.
Do you agree with what I'm saying, Bill? Like, there's almost a certain intuition that kind of comes out.
Yeah, and I think, I agree with you about that, as well as because it seems like really good slow-paced movies have have this element of mystery about them. It's like, well, what's really going on? What's really happening? Where are we headed with this? And I think that's important.
Yeah, Yeah, and I think that's how.
It keeps you invested.
Yeah, it's not you're not having stuff constantly spelled out to you through a dialogue or visual hints or whatever, or it's just kind of you're left to kind of piece things together and figure them out as they go. And I think films with a slower pace can, I know some people get driven mad by them. It's like they just don't they everyone's different, and some people just like I can't do this. I can't stick with this because it's just too much. It's not holding my interest because it's up such a pace that I can't keep with it. So.
Yeah, well, yeah, again, it depends on what are they doing, what's the dialogue, what's between the lines, how is it just moving? Because there's some slow-paced horror films that I don't like, others that I love, and I don't know, to me it always comes down to story, and if you can make it work, great, and if you can't, you can't.
Yeah, and I mean, I think you mentioned David Lynch earlier, Bill, and I mean, depending on who you talk to, it's considered a horror movie or it's not considered a horror movie, whatever. It's just disturbing as fuck. It's Eraserhead, which could be one of the definitive examples of like a slow burn movie, but it remains pretty ambiguous throughout in that interpretive way that David Lynch likes to operate in. It's more just, here's what's running through my head. I put it on the screen. You make what you will of it. But there's that feeling where it's like he has something, and there's something in that visual sense, those that black and white imagery, that oppressive industrial landscape, the aggressively mechanical soundtrack, that you'll either be totally pulled in by it or you'll be totally turned off by it.
Yeah, exactly. And that's probably his most surreal and avant-garde film, other than his short films. But yeah, that's perfect. That's a perfect example. Because I remember, watching it for the first time. Like, what the hell's going on, man? And I was so enamored, though. That movie had its hooks in me, man. I wasn't falling asleep at all,
Yeah, I know I've told this story before, but I think I watched it at like 2 or 3 in the morning one night, and I was totally like eyes wide open, jaw dropped, and I couldn't take my eyes off of it, or my ears for that matter. So,
Can't argue that point, man.
yeah, and I mean, I think that is definitely it's a slowly paced film. And it leaves much. There's Lynch refuses to explain his movies, and I
Which
think
is
that's
beautiful.
yeah, that's something you admire a lot about him, and I do as well, because oftentimes people, filmmakers do the opposite, and it pisses me off. Where it's like you had something good going,
Right.
and you fucked it up by overexplaining it. You gave us this ending where a character walks out and explains the fuck out of it. And Bill, to segue slightly, I feel that you could call Psycho a slow burn film.
Oh, absolutely. Oh man, absolutely. I watched it again not too long ago, and it's funny because I didn't realize how slow it actually was.
It is slow, yeah.
It is. And Anthony Perkins is killing it, so it's like, and that was great. He's great to watch. But
Yeah.
yeah, that's definitely a very slow film, with one of horror's most poignant and scenes, where that shower scene is just that changed horror in many, many ways.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's really, you almost have to put yourself back in the time period when it came out to kind of fully appreciate
Oh yeah.
what Hitchcock does. And people have talked about it, forever, because it's like, well, Janet Leigh is the ostensible protagonist who's gonna find herself from point A to point B at the end of the movie, and that's not what happens. But you don't know what's going on with this shower. You don't necessarily expect something ominous to happen, even though the way Hitchcock films it is ominous. It's kind of obviously it's just naturally invasive.
It really is an excellent scene. It's fantastic.
Yeah, and then kind of when the Herman strings and the shower curtain swings open, the movie kind of shifts. I don't know if it shifts is the right word, but it kind of goes someplace. It's like a hard right turn,
right?
But then the pace almost becomes leisurely again after that. It kind of slows down again.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's mirroring the mind of Norman Bates, you know.
Good call.
He gets into this frenzied state, and then it's like everything's fine again, you know. And it's like he made the world right. And no, that's a good one, man. Yeah, I didn't even have Psycho on my list of possible movies to talk about, but that's perfect.
Well, you know, when I was a little kid and watching it on AMC back when they actually showed movie classics, and Bob Dorian would introduce each movie. For you old timers out there, I would watch it and be freaking bored out of my little mind. I was like, geez, this movie is boring. It's slow. And of course, like, I watched it a few years ago and I love it now. I really appreciate it a lot more. So,
yeah, it's interesting. You know, when I was a kid, I saw friggin'. Oh my God. I can't believe it. It was in my head and it went away.
Oh no.
Oh man, what the frig, man. Craig T. Nelson was the father.
Oh, Poltergeist.
Thank you, Jesus Christmas, man. I was thinking of Poltergeist by Lloyd Kaufman. I got lost. No, Poltergeist, when I saw it as a kid, I remember everybody screaming in the theaters, freaking out, going apeshit. And I hadn't seen it in, like, I don't know, 20 years or some crap. And I bought it, the DVD, and I put it in, couldn't wait to, like, watch it again. And I'm like, these scenes are long and dull, and boy, it took a long time for that movie to kick into gear.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I never realized it. Man, it's crazy. It's crazy, but
that's kind of interesting how it's, like, flipped, you know.
Yeah.
And maybe because Poltergeist was a bit more of a joy buzzer kind of experience than Psycho was, I'd say. Yeah.
Oh yeah. But you know, it's probably you know, my favorite sci-fi horror, you know. I love it to death. I've loved it since I first seen the film, and I watch it several times a year. It's Alien, and as
sure.
Director Ridley Scott put it, he said, nothing happens for the first 40 minutes. And he's right. And you know what? I don't give a shit. I love this movie. I love the pace. I love the character interactions. Mm-hmm. If you're on a spaceship, and you're in the middle of nowhere, and you're all alone, like months from Earth, it's like, that's just creepy on its own. You don't need anything else.
Yeah.
You know, man, we're alone. We're out here. Nobody can hear us. It's not our system. And it's like, holy shit. Everything's black, and it's just, you're just so screwed. You know, it's like, you know, they're on a mining ship. And I thought that was perfect. What are we? We're a bunch of miners. We're like, fuck this shit, man. You know, it's like, get me out of here. You're so screwed.
Well, it's like you're kind of almost like the grunt work kind of. Yeah.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, it's not like some fancy ship. It's not cool stuff. They have one little area, one little tiny area to call home, and then the rest of this ship is storing millions of tons of ore, and that's it. And everything's dirty and wet and skanky and. And there they are in the middle of nowhere. And is that a distress signal? Don't answer the call, man. Get out of here.
Yeah, no. You know, I was thinking about Alien as well, Bill. And those are some really good points. And it also, on another note, kind of shows the commentary. What still exists today is how a product is valued way more than the workforce proper that manufactures or collects the product. Yeah.
Age old, man. Age old, and that's sad.
Yeah, where's Karl Marx? We need him on the show.
Oh, jeez. Oh, God. What the hell's that?
Well, I was just going to say.
Dude, my phone's off.
Uh-oh.
My phone is off, and it's ringing on my freaking... That's weird, man. That shouldn't happen.
I think we should. I think we should just follow the progress of the phone for the rest of the show. It'll be a real slow burn.
What were we talking about, man?
Well, Bill, I wanted to ask you a question. Going back to Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, Tarantino is notorious for, as we said, he doesn't really like to trim down stuff, even though apparently there's a longer version of that movie that he would like to release in pieces on Netflix.
Whatever.
But does length do you think play a role in the efficiency or the effectiveness of a film that takes on a deliberately slower pace or a slower reveal?
I would say no. And here's why. I remember as a kid again, but I saw it recently and it still holds up for me in many ways as a fun action film, was Indiana Jones, the original, you know? And
Yeah.
And that movie's 2 hours long, but I swear when I watch that film, it feels like it goes by in 10 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And I've seen slow burn films that I actually said the phrase that really resonate and work for me that I really enjoy because I don't even know what the length of the movies are because they don't feel long. I mean, I just watched, what did I see recently? Oh, I just saw finally for the first time in my life Attack of the Killer Tomatoes.
All right.
And as soon as it starts, I'm like, oh, I wonder if this is where they got the idea for Airplane with this bad humor and stuff like that, the bad comedy. And then after a while, it's like I fell asleep on that too because it's just like going on forever. And it's only an hour and a half long, but it felt like 3 hours.
Right, you know? Right. Well, but, you know, Bill. Yeah, go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
Well, it's interesting that you mentioned Raiders of the Lost Ark because I was thinking of in thinking of this topic, I was thinking, just what's a movie that is the total opposite of a slow burn? And recently, I watched the Steven Soderbergh Ocean's 11 for the first time.
Oh, okay.
And that's a two-hour movie, and that thing went by like, boom. I was like,
really?
Holy shit.
Is it worth watching?
Oh, you haven't seen it?
No, I really, why would I see it? Is it worth watching?
No, I would I really enjoyed it. I'd give it a 4 out of 5.
Fuck!
Yeah.
Damn, okay.
Yeah, just it's a lot of fun. I laughed a lot.
Oh, cool. I'm in.
But the way Soderbergh, who also edits his movies, yeah, you know, the way he does that, it's just like seamless, flawless. The character interaction is fantastic. It was just it was just nice to sit back and watch a fun caper like that.
Yeah.
So that was kind of like what I was thinking. I was like, that's a movie where I was thinking, oh, it's probably at the halfway point, but it's like, oh no, it's actually near the end, because it's just been moving so damn fast.
Yeah, I would say, you know, and I know we can mention every action film ever made practically, but like The Raid and Dread, I mean, those movies, once they start, they don't stop, you know?
Oh yeah, they're the total. They establish their purpose, and it's off to the races after that.
It's off to the bodies, man. That's what it's off to.
Death by refrigerator.
But like, you know, I saw Let the Right One In, and that movie has a pace to it. You know, it has a slow one, and
oh, good call, yeah.
And it does amp up, and when it does, man, and it comes to that climax, you're like, and it's like, you know, and it's And I never got bored of that film. It's like it's 2 hours, and it's like I was just drawn in from the beginning, and I stayed there, you know? It's like, it depends on so many factors. It depends on the lighting, the editing, the sound, all of it, the directing, the acting. I mean, it's funny because I remember a sports team. I think it was the Yankees or something like that way, way back when they were having this big dry spell. Probably the Mets, actually, it was. Mm-hmm. Paul J. Williams can let me verify, can verify this. But the whole team went to like group therapy because they're like, what's going on? How come we're not winning? And the wild thing was here, because you see it all the time in sports. Like there's what? I don't know. Like say, you know, baseball, there's just so many professional players, you know, mm-hmm. and they're out there and they're playing and they're all like the best players. Yeah. But some aren't, even though they're, you know what I mean? And some teams, it's like they could have a ton of great players on them, but they might not do well. What right. is it that makes it work? What is it that makes it gel? And it's the same thing with a movie.
Yeah.
You know, you know, we see it all the time. And we see some people, they get it right with a movie, and then their next thing is completely off. And it's yeah. about that rhythm and that heartbeat within the film, you know, that they maintain. And it's the same with books. You know, it's like, does this book have a rhythm, a beat to it? I think, you know, Toni Morrison passed away today.
Right.
And a phenomenal loss for the world. And she, I don't, I'm not looking it up now, but I'm wondering if she's the one who said, you know, poetry is like breathing. And if she didn't say it, she probably thought about it, you know, yeah. because she was that brilliant. And yeah. And that's it. You know, there has to be a rhythm to whatever you're doing. And even if it's a disjointed rhythm, it still will have its own beat that will somehow make sense, like Eraserhead did.
Yeah.
You know, that's disjointed. That's messed up. That doesn't work, but it does work because it was its own unique alternative, you know, beat. And, you know, that's what a solid film needs to make it, whether it's fast-paced or slow. And Let the Right One In has it. I mean, that's my... And I love vampire films, and that's my number one out of every one that's ever been made.
Holy shit, man. Okay.
Yeah, I've seen over... I'm not kidding when I say, like, 120 vampire films, because that's my favorite, you know, creature.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe even more than that. But, man, they just nailed it with that thing.
Yeah, Bill, actually... That's really good. And when you started talking about it, I went back to the time I watched that film, and I remember being very kind of thinking to myself, wait, what's going on? Who's this guy? How's he, what's his connection to this little girl? It's this real sense of ambiguity and mystery that mm-hmm. does gradually kind of come together as the film progresses, sort of culminating in that fantastic sequence near the end, which is done with like a 2 minute static shot
right
under the pool.
I think you got it, Johnny.
What?
No, keep talking, but you I think you nailed what makes it work, what makes slow burn work and not work.
Yeah, because I was thinking Thomas Alfredson, who directed the film,
yeah.
employs a lot of static shots in that movie too.
Yeah.
just kind of something I like is that, you know, of course, depending on how good the filmmaker is, you can really let characters and dialogue and just the image itself breathe a little if you just film it as it is. I mean, you can think of Irreversible in that 10-minute scene in the tunnel, which is like a static shot.
Oh, it is.
But in any case, I digress.
No, you hit on it, and now Oh, Madon, what were you saying? Jesus Christmas. How did it escape my brain, man? Work has been insane lately, man. It's sucking my brain out of my head.
okay, it
really has been. It was crazy. son of a bitch, man. Encapsulate what you just said, Johnny, please.
It's just talking about you don't know who the characters are, how they relate to each other necessarily. It builds to that.
Thank you. Thank you, Johnny. It's that element of ambiguity.
Yes.
You know, one of the reasons I hate, loathe, and despise and refuse to continue to watch Stranger Things is because the audience is always steps ahead of every character in that show. Why people watch it, I don't know. It's bad storytelling. It really is. It sucks.
It's the 80s, Bill. That's why
I could give a fuck. It's suck. And that sucks. And they saved the world. What else are they going to do? The show should be over. But the thing is, when you're watching these movies, you are really, as an audience member, you are totally in the dark. Mm-hmm. And it's like, what the hell is going on? I think that's why I mentioned Miracle Mile at first, because you're like, what's really going on here?
Yes.
And it becomes a mystery. It becomes intriguing. Curiosity should hopefully overwhelm you to the point where it's like, I have to see this, and I want to continue to watch. And some movies just do that better than others. It's like, you know, how are you going to bait that hook? Well, how come the one fisherman catches the fish and to the left of him the guy doesn't? And it's like, it has to do with technique and patience and a whole bunch of other things to make it work. So,
yeah,
like The Witch. I mean, how many people like, I hate that movie, you know?
I think Greg Palko likes it a lot, actually.
Palko Designs hates it with a mad passion. That fucking movie, it's like, I like it. And he's like, you did? You know, it's like, you know, we have to like, you know, talk about it a different way. But yeah, he hates that movie, and a lot of people do, and they hate the ending and all of that stuff. And
right.
It's not a perfect film to me, but I was really enraptured by it. And
yeah, I only saw it in the theater, and I still remember I feel like most of it from seeing it just in the theater.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
But I think something I was thinking about while you were talking about Let the Right One In, Bill, is what, and even The Witch, what is the character focus in those films? Like, the main focal point in Let the Right One In is the relationship between that girl and that boy.
Right.
In The Witch, it's like a, what, four-person family.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very...
Five.
Yeah. Oh, five. Okay. Oh, is there a baby?
Maybe,
I think there.
Maybe. Yeah. Keep talking, Johnny.
Well, my point is, I feel like looking over my list, these are more intimate in terms of characterization. It's not like a sweeping, epic thing. Typically, I feel like the locations tend to be limited, and the characters tend to be more whittled down to just like they're the essentials, you know?
Right.
So the filmmaker, if they're doing their job correctly, can hone in on those specific characters. So the characters can provide that anchor. So you're sucked in, even though the film's pace is kind of like taking its time, getting you acclimated to the weirdness or whatever.
And I'm glad you mentioned weirdness, man, because you're right. And that, did you see The Invitation?
Oh, heck yeah. Yeah.
You know, that fits in perfectly with this. Our phones, man.
Excuse me. I'm being invited to The Invitation. Go ahead.
Oh, man. This show, total quality, people. Total quality. Don't worry. I'll edit all that shit out.
We pride ourselves on content. Come on.
Yeah, that's it. Oh, that's funny, man. You know what? You and I could go probably like 3 weeks without having a phone ring once. Like, honestly.
Seriously, Bill, some people have to pay Patreon prices to hear the phone call flubs and for the podcast. So we're giving it to you for free, folks.
Yeah,
come on.
It's a Patreon-free show. But yeah, The Invitation, man. And again, there's that whole element of like, what's going on? Is this guy disturbed? What's going on with these people at this party? How come he's seeing the world differently? Like, what's happening? And then at the end of the film, you get totally kicked in the balls, you know? And,
yeah.
But you're just like... It's like, I have to know what's going on. It's that element of curiosity that keeps you grounded and adhere to the film.
You know what, Bill? There's a great moment near the beginning of The Invitation, and it's Logan Marshall Green is the character who kind of, quote unquote, doesn't belong at the party.
Right.
But he's our anchor because he has that same suspicion that the viewer has toward what's happening. He's like, where's such and such? Where did he go? This guy disappeared. Where is he?
Yeah,
but he seems to be the only one who gives a crap about that. And then there's a moment where someone walks out the front door, gets in a car or a cab, but they're obscured by someone in the foreground. So you're not quite sure what happens to that. And it might be the person he's talking about. But it's just this very wonderful moment of composition where it's like, wait, what? I want to see around that guy. I want to see what happened where that other person's going. So that's another example, kind of a use of technique, kind of to create an ambiguity within the deliberate pace to kind of make you sit up and take notice.
Oh yeah, absolutely, man. Totally.
That's another thing, Bill, with these movies is they're not passive. They're really they may seem passive like when you're watching them, but you really, as a viewer, you have to engage with them. And I think that's kind of where the patience and the temperament kind of, it's like, okay, you kind of acknowledge at a certain point that I'm kind of strapping down for this type of movie. I'm going to have to keep my senses about me and pay attention, because if I miss something, I might totally like miss an important part of the movie. Mm-hmm. And you know, so I think it requires you to kind of be more attentive.
Yeah, this isn't some, you know, popcorn movie where you could check your brain at the door and just have a good time. And I love those movies too, but you know, I have to be in the right mood and all of that stuff for even a slow paced film. You know, it's like, oh, I'm not in the mood for this tonight, man. I want, like, you know, put in Dread again, you know, and I'm good. You know, I want to see people get blown to bits every 2 seconds, you know? I like that. And, you know, it reminds me of The Descent a little bit too.
Sure.
Where you have that, you know, these women on this, you know, camping, and, rafting adventure. And then the whole thing, like Deliverance, the whole thing turns into something completely different and unexpected, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to be engaged with it because you're not just learning about the characters. And it's great because the elements of conflict are there right from the beginning.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And it's perfect. So we already have stuff happening. We're already engaged. And then when a horror hits, it really punches harder.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's like, well, I know these people, all this conflict's been going on already, and that's a build up to the stuff to come. And then, I mean, this movie really becomes like, you know, crazy, eight bonkers in the last third.
Yeah.
And it's funny because the trip to get there isn't a bad one at all. And it's a really damn good film. I mean, this is, I think over to like the last 10 years, if it's older than 10 years, I'd freak out.
I think it was 2006. Yeah.
What? Fuck!
It we're old, man.
Damn!
Yeah.
It's just a really, really solid film that's just has such a strong ending, and it's powerful. And the characters, it just, man. It has one scene in there that made me almost wet my pants and go through the ceiling at the same time. And and it's rare that I get that nowadays, and horror films are so friggin' lame.
You know what an interesting thing about that movie is, Bill, is in addition to all the stuff you said, which was great, like the conflict, the way the conflict's established from the outset, once you get in that cave, there's something that happens and they get stuck and they got to figure their way out. So
yeah.
before anything that really ties into the fantastical occurs, you've already had to deal with cave-ins, one character, and this makes my chest clench whenever I watch it, gets stuck within this really tight space, and she's like, I can't get out, I can't get out, I can't get out.
Yeah.
She feels like she's claustrophobic. She feels like she can't get out of there until someone, I think, helps her out.
Right.
And that's the scene that got to me. I'm like, already, I'm totally into this. And it's not even gotten to the real spooky stuff yet.
No.
This is these are just common fears that Neil Marshall is playing on, and he's playing on them really well.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And this is a complete antithesis to Dog Soldiers, which was his first film or something?
A fast-paced action movie, yeah.
Yeah, oh man, that movie's phenomenal. It's one of my favorite horror films of all time. And then he does this, and it's like, wow, he could really shift gears. And he did it well. Both are phenomenal.
Yeah. Well, Bill, you know, one movie that I think kind of stands...
Holy Jesus!
What happened?
No, I keep getting a phone call, man, coming through my computer.
Does that phone call live in the weak and wounded, Bill? Come on, I'm talking about Session 9, which
is... I know, I got it.
Notoriously, like we were saying with The Witch, this is a polarizing movie. I knew people who watched this years ago, and they were like, we hate it, it was boring, nothing happened. Whereas I watched it, and I was, like, totally, like, into it.
Right.
I love Session 9. Even with the... I think where the plot goes actually really works because the characters really work in that movie.
Mm-hmm.
But again, there's a sense of banality to it. What's the premise? And granted, it's a premise you don't really see in movies that often. It's a bunch of hazmat guys...
Yeah,
doing a job, basically. It's about as unglamorous as you can get, you know.
It's about Larry Fessenden, man, being cool as shit as always.
Speeding in with his repair truck and everything, blasting those tunes, yeah. Larry Fessenden, serial cameo. But, you know, I really love Session 9. I love how it builds, and maybe it's because Brad Anderson and Steve Jevondan, who wrote the script,
yeah,
they did such a good job of establishing these people and their conflicts and their relationships to a point where it's like, okay, these are some blue-collar schlubs, but they got dreams and ambitions, you know, which are laid out at one point.
Right.
So you get a feeling that they have a real stake in the success of this job, but unfortunately there may or may not be ghosts of the Danvers State Hospital, you know, haunting the hallways while they work. So
absolutely.
So I really like that. I think the film is a great build, and the sets are fantastic, and I think I think most of it was like actually how it was when they scouted it, actually.
Well, Session 9 has been well received by many. I don't know of anybody who doesn't like it, you know, for who's seen it.
Yeah.
But the one that I think is really polarizing is the Blair Witch Project.
Sure.
Which you could say is slow, and you know, it is slow, and it takes a while, and
does it build to something?
Yeah, does it? And some people will say absolutely not, and others will be like, I mean, it didn't play. It played on some of my childhood fears at one point, so it worked. The movie worked for me. I thought it was great. You know, I don't think it's like phenomenally perfect or anything like that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you have that same thing. Where are we going? What's going on? Okay, they're lost. That's going on forever. But when I first, like, I could see that more now. But when I watched it originally, and even like the first 10, 15 times I watched it, I'm like really invested, you know, and they made it work because they went deeper into, not even deeper into the woods, but deeper into just being screwed, you know, it's like.
No, absolutely. Yeah. And that's one of the fact that you don't have recognizable actors in that movie. They look like you and me. And it's like, well. That helps too. Sometimes the star factor is a detractor in movies and horror, especially. Kind of, it's like, oh well, that guy's gonna live, or you know, the name's too big for them not to live or have a substantial role in it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I know, but
yeah,
man, I don't know what else to add.
Well, Bill. What about
Johnny Takes the Cue?
I got a bunch. And I know
so
some...
why, but it's like I don't know what else that new to say with the ones that I'm looking at.
Well, what do you think about The Changeling, Bill? Because I know you love that movie, and that I would say is definitely a film that takes its time getting to where it gets to. Or do you agree with that, or?
Yeah, it does. It does take time to build. But I think once it hits that seance scene, which is brilliant and the greatest seance scene you'll ever see in any movie ever,
yeah,
is like, holy shit, you know, the floodgates are open and now you're screwed. But it does take a little bit, but You're given all of these great elements right from the beginning, and it's almost like there is a slow beat to mm-hmm. it where, okay, this is going to happen here. 5 minutes later, this is going to happen there. And it's great because you're caught up in, George C. Scott's character's life because, you know, he lost his family. He's starting anew in a whole strange land, and he's still really suffering. You know, we get to see this normally tough character, tough actor,
mm-hmm.
you know, bawling, you know, and it was just, and it was great. And then this negative energy kicks off this, what's that pounding, man? Something in the pipes. But what I really loved about Changeling, even with its slow pace, the beauty of it is that he's not an idiot. He's not disavowing these things that he's hearing. He's not denying, making excuses. He's like, all right, something's going on. And that's what I really loved about the film, because it's like, all right, I got to figure this stuff out. So as soon as he's invested in that mystery, even though it might be slow in the beginning, we're there with him trying to figure this out. And so it's cool because you're like, well, what are we going to find?
Yeah.
You know?
And I think you bring up a good point about his character, Bill, in that it hooks you in. He hooks you in right away because our link to him is his loss. And we can all mm-hmm. relate to having lost someone.
Or something.
If not a person, a pet, or, you know, just in general, this is kind of a universal emotion, and that's what brings us in to his story, and that's what keeps us invested, and our knowledge of his character, and he's asking that we believe this, and we do believe it.
Yeah.
And that's kind of a nice, refreshing thing with that movie, because oftentimes you have those obligatory crap scenes where some Jagoff is like would make fun of the psychic or make fun of him,
yeah.
or like, oh, that stuff that doesn't exist, blah blah blah, you're an idiot kind of crap. And I hate that because it's such an overused trope in horror. The Changeling is kind of left to breathe as a film. It's not unlike The Haunting, I'd say, which has its own really deliberate pace and a kind of,
oh, hell yeah,
specific sensibility toward the action, which is often very restrained and subtle.
No, well, that's excellent, man. The Haunting, the original, not that third-rate shit remake or that awful television series. the Haunting has such a it's wonderful. You know, The Changeling and The Haunting are both on my, you know, best of all time, you know, horror movie list, and
yeah.
And it's great, the atmosphere that they create with the film. And, you know, Robert Wise did such an excellent thing in capturing all of the amazing elements of Shirley Jackson's book, The Haunting of Hill House, and mm-hmm. applying it in the film. And it's just like Nell was brought to life in just, you know, phenomenal fashion. And
she's kind of she's probably an even more broken character than George C. Scott's character in The Changeling.
Oh, hell yeah, she's more broken. She's been sequestered. She's been taking care of her mother, who she may or may not have killed. You know?
And, right. And, ambiguity.
Ambiguity,
yeah.
And I love it. And even in the book, it's like, oh, what happened or didn't happen? And book's great. And and I must admit, I'm jealous. Vicky Spiegel, one of our listeners, who's amazing, and a co-writer friend of mine, for something that everyone will be hearing in October around Halloween. I'll leave it at that for now. With the phenomenal poster by Palko, Greg Palko of Palko Designs. Can't wait to share that with the world very soon. She has an original The Haunting movie poster in her house.
Cool.
I know, cool. Well, it was there last time I saw it, because, you know, things like that just disappear, Johnny, you know what I mean? It wasn't me, Vicky. I swear to God, I wouldn't steal your movie poster, one of my favorite films. I wouldn't do it.
What's the poster look like? Is it like the Claire Bloom, Julie Harris kind of, or Julie Harris image with the house in the back? Or
yeah, it's
something
Julie.
Else?
Yeah, it's Julie. It's like a three-color thing.
Okay.
And, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, Julie Harris, she was awesome, and we lost her like 2 years ago. That was sad, but No, but again, you know, that movie, it just has this atmosphere that keeps you focused and riveted to the screen. It's excellent.
Yeah, and I think there's, again, that universality of emotion, and the fact that, you know, you're talking about it's really Julie Harris's movie, even though she is kind of the, I don't know what you would call it, the skittish librarian kind of character. Yeah. in the movie, but it's,
I'm
all
expected.
And she has her internal monologue and everything going on too, but you know, it's she's not necessarily a character you would think, because she's not presented as strong, but she does have this journey that she goes on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that ending, man. But
well, you know, Bill, I gotta mention this one, and I know I've talked about it before, but I love it so much.
Can I guess?
You can. See if you get it.
The Black Coat's Daughter?
Fuck yeah, man.
I knew it! Palico's at home going, what? What a piece of shit.
They should have called this Suck Burn Horror instead.
Suck Burn Horror. That's a great name for a band, man. We're Suck Burn Horror!
We don't care if you like us or not. Enjoy the slow song.
Eat my liver.
Gross. I don't even like regular liver.
I do. It's great with peanut butter on it. Go ahead, Johnny. Wow, what a pause.
Good segue, Bill. No, I think The Black Coat's Daughter is probably, as far as recent examples of a slowly paced film that really pays off hugely, I think it's my favorite example from the last couple of years. It just totally captivated me from start to finish with its mystery, basically. Mm-hmm. You know, you're introduced to Kat, played by Kiernan Shipka. She's haunted by images of a wrecked car.
She's amazing, man.
Oh my God, you know, I just finished watching Mad Men recently. Uh-huh. And I can see why Oz Perkins picked her to be in this movie, because I was amazed at her range on that show, and how she literally is like a little toddler and she's a teenager by the end. So, mm-hmm. But she's just this it's fantastically ambiguous character. Okay. Kiernan, in a minute, Kiernan, okay.
In a minute.
We'll talk. Cocktails. But she's fantastic because she's this kind of Nell-like character from The Haunting. You kind of, what's going on with her? She's very, very quiet, very monotone, seems very skittish and uncertain. And I just love that. I was just taken in by kind of her wide eyes and kind of impassive face, kind of. It's like, there is emotion there, but there's something dark. There's something dark behind that we're not getting access to. And I loved her interactions and how Lucy Boynton, kind of the girl I should say Lucy Boynton gets stuck hanging out with her over winter break.
Right.
And she's kind of the opposite. She's extroverted. She has a boyfriend. She goes out. But she has her own problems as well. So there's all these relatable conflicts going on within this film. And then Perkins starts to gradually introduce this more possibly supernatural / spiritual element into the proceedings, and it gets even more complicated. Mm-hmm. And that's something I love about that film, is just by the end there's just so many different layers to it, and I just love thinking about them thematically, from a character perspective, just kind of falling down that subjective spiral of the whole film. Yeah.
Oh man, I love it. Love it.
Well, yeah. I mean, what do you think, Bill?
No, it was great. No, Black Coat's Daughter had some really cool shit in there that I really enjoyed. I know you definitely love it more than me, but Man, and her character in the film, and I don't want to. I mean, what they did in regards to what happens to her, I thought was fantastic. And I can't really say what that is because it'll give it away.
Oh,
But
yeah.
I think people definitely need to see it because that I like that. I love when anyone takes a trope and fucking destroys it. So I was really happy with that. There was only one scene that I was like a little bugged with. That was it.
You'll have to tell me about it then.
Oh, I'll tell you, man. I'll tell you now. I don't care.
Is it the getting up, rising up from the bed moment, or is it
No,
something
no.
else?
In the
Okay.
car with the.
Oh, we talked about it,
Yeah.
Bill.
Yeah, we did.
James Remar was, yeah.
Friggin'
We
amazing, but that was just like, come on.
Well, I think you and I saw something different in that scene, and that's why.
Whatever.
That's no, that's why I had to correct you on it. But anyway.
Correct me. Oh, I'll correct you, sir.
But anyway, Bill, I look for God in the tiny things that occur. So, yeah, as James Remar said in that film.
Yeah, he did, didn't he?
So good. I'm so glad I've said this before, but I'm so glad he's having like a career resurgence, because I felt like he kind of got lost in the shuffle for a time.
Well, he lost his job on fucking Aliens, man.
Oh yeah, that's right. And there are pictures of
There
him
are,
as
yeah. There,
Hicks.
yep.
I th
That's he got robbed, man.
For as much as Dexter got fucked up in its last couple of seasons, I was so glad he had like a steady gig on that show, and I think that
Same here.
helped. I think that helped him like get more work. So
Yeah.
I'm just happy he's back in demand again.
Man, Dexter sucked.
That last season, I have it on DVD mostly in case I ever want to pull it out.
Coasters.
Well, I want to pull it out and be reminded of how not to write a satisfying ending to
A series.
a story or any character arc. They just totally they drop torpedoes in the lake to get a couple fish. Yeah, with that last season.
Well, Johnny, if you didn't know, I'm a lumberjack and I'm okay. And is it scream out time?
Say my name. Yeah.
Say my. We
Let's
are
say it
the one who
slow.
knocks. Yes. In any event, these
Last
are
knock you'll ever hear.
these are wonderful souls and entities that you could find on Twitter. I'm going to give you their Twitter handle, a little bit about them, and we're going to move forward. Night Church. What the hell's that? They're at Hail Night Church, and Night Church is a horror cult comedy sketch team. Isn't that
Okay.
cool? Yeah, and they perform at the Pack Theater, and that's awesome. You can follow the Pack Theater as well. So check them out. They are friggin' awesome. I love them. And we are recording this on Dave K's birthday. Who's Dave K? He's a fiend on film, and he's the social and well, my gosh, Jesus, Christmas.
You're messing it
The
up, man. Come on.
way.
Monkey photo for you.
Well, he didn't write a proper sentence, so I got thrown, man. The social media page for Dave K slash A Fiend on Film, horror, indie, and foreign films, art, graphic design, architecture, and photos. And he's out of Grayson, Georgia, and you can follow him on WordPress at The Magnificent World of Dave K. Isaac R. Thorne, Thorne with
Yep.
an E, dark comic horror. You could find him on Scream Radio, which is hosted by the lovely and vivacious Trey C. And he's also on the Horror Assist and also on TN Horror News. And his new book, The Gordon Place, is out. Pick that up on Amazon.com. Horrorfuel.com. Who are they? That is on Twitter. ZADF underscore org, all caps. Fuel your hunger for horror. Visit horrorfuel.com for the latest in horror news. You can also follow them on Facebook, and as well as you can email them, man, at horrorfuelinfo@gmail.com. They are very, very awesome. Angie Bulkley. Angie Bulkley is a former comedy critic and a press photographer. She's into horror and ska and the Clash Junkie. Angie, don't freak out, but I think you and I should just get married. I like to combine song lyrics with horror movie gifs, working on a horror movie called Malcolm. I don't know if he's in the middle, and if she's in the middle of the movie or not, but
Oh.
No, I was waiting. That was a good one, man. I sort of flubbed it, but...
I was going to say, Frankie Muniz is in Kingsfoil now, which is kind of a local band, but, yeah.
Kind of, wow. I'm sorry, we're in Harrisburg and we don't want to be. Iona Morrison, you can follow her at Iona CRV. She's the author of the Blue Cove Mystery Series, 7 books and counting, and she's published by the Wild Rose Press, and she writes paranormal, mystery, and romance. And you could also follow her on ionamorrison.com. Trash Can Dan PT3 as for part 3, and he's at a street corner near you. That's all you need to know. Trash Can Dan is cool as hell. Check him out. A woman that I adore, Johnny does too, but I love her more. Kim McDonald. And who is that? That is Dixie Fairy, and she's a horror junkie from Charleston, South Carolina. And you could find her work at fairymusings.com. And well, it's now defunct, right? Loud Green Bird, Johnny?
I believe so. Yeah.
Sad to say. And she did one article that you could find at Crash Palace, but you could also find her at Thomas S. Flowers' Machine Mean. Check her out there, and
yes,
and check out Thomas S. Flowers because he's awesome as hell too. What else do we have? And finally tonight, great people that I met recently, and I'm sure you heard my two-part interview with Lloyd Kaufman, the man behind Troma, and it is Troma Entertainment itself. It's the Troma team at Troma_team, 45 years of disrupting media. That's what they do, damn it, and they do it well. Movies of the future. And you could request Volume 2 in your local theaters. They are straight out of New York at Tromaville in Queens. And go to TromaDirect.com for so much more. Johnny.
Very nice. You can find me on Twitter and Letterboxd at JohnnyNum. There are no H's in those Johnnies. And you can also find my writing on CrashPalaceProductions.com. Billy, take us out of here, but take us out slowly.
Slowly. I'm Billy Crash. I'm Crash. You can find me at CrashPalaceProductions.com for links to this show and wonderful articles by great people that we talked about already. Johnny Num and Dixie Fairy is Kim McDonald. And artwork by Palco Designs, the great Greg Palco. And you can also follow me on Twitter at Crash Palace. And that's pretty much it, Johnny.
Okay, Bill. All right.
Wow. So that wasn't slow, but it was quick. I don't know. Did you enjoy it? Was it good for you, Johnny?
I live in this weekend wounded podcast, Bill.
What the fuck?
Where were we on Christmas Eve in Lowell? That's all I'm curious about.
Jeez, I don't know, man.
What the fuck happened on Christmas Eve in Lowell? That's what I want to know.
Was it a black Christmas, Johnny?
Don't make me get out my Bing Crosby. I think that's the sign we should end the show.
Okay, then we're ending it. Good night, Johnny.
Good night, Billy.
Oh, God.